Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you. Todd Rosiak is back. Todd, I haven't spoken to you in, I don't know, when was the last time we did a podcast episode together?
Well, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but according to my little thingamajiggy on the screen here, our last podcast together was October 6th.
Really? Yeah. It's really been that long. Oh, my gosh.
47 minutes and 59 seconds.
Okay. You keep very good records. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We've had a lot of episodes with Tom Hodricourt in the interim, but Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, joins me today looking at the first three games of the Milwaukee Brewers season. It was a mixed bag, to say the least. But before we get to sort of the ins and outs of these games against the Minnesota Twins, which a series that ended with the Twins winning two of the three games, Todd, I know you didn't get a chance to see some of the games in spring training where we did have fans in the stands. This is your first time seeing fans back in the stands since 2019. So I'm just curious, somebody who was in the building, who got to see it, got to feel it, just give me your impressions of what this was like. This had to be somewhat a return to normalcy for you.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. You know, obviously it's not all the way back to what it was. You know, I looked it up. It was September 22nd of 2019. That was the last Brewer game at what was then Miller Park. So I think my math was correct, it was 555 days between games with fans there. And, you know, even though it's, you know, between about 10,000 and 12,000 for the first three games, it just makes a world of difference. There's just, you know, there's more of a buzz in the ballpark. There's, you know, the cheering makes a big difference, the music, just everything, even though it's on a smaller scale. It just feels so much more like a normal game, you know, and just kind of like normalcy. And it was nice, you know. I know that we've asked the players and the coaches a ton about it, and, you know, they can't say enough good things about that. And, you know, hopefully as the spring and summer progresses, we start seeing those numbers bump up and more people being allowed in and, you know, more restrictions being loosened, assuming everybody's doing the right things and the numbers are going down and everything as far as COVID goes. So, you know, a good first step for sure, and definitely better than, you know, what we had become way too used to last year, which was the canned crowd noise and, you know, really just silence otherwise. Just very, very strange. So, like I said, good first step.
Obviously, visually, you can tell that the crowd is 25% capacity. But for somebody who has tickets or wants to get tickets for a Brewer game, I mean, does it feel muted at all? Because there are obviously fewer people there, a lot of people wearing masks, probably not as many people standing and cheering as you would have normally. Or if you close your eyes and say Travis Shaw hits a game-tying double with two outs in the ninth, does it still, you know, just because there's crowd noise at all, does it still feel like a normal baseball setting, or is it, it's still going to take some getting used to?
Yeah, no, it feels normal. It really does. Tom and I walked through the different concourses actually all 3 days. And, you know, the kind of the buzz in the concourses was pretty much the same, just fewer bodies, obviously. The concession stands have been tapered back and with the stanchions and fewer numbers and the little stickers on the ground telling you where to stand for distancing and everything. But, you know, still people seem to be happy to be there. You know, good interactions, that sort of thing. And in the ballpark, I guess that's a good comparison. Like if you did just close your eyes, you would think like, okay, this is maybe a Wednesday afternoon game during the during a school year where there's 20,000 people, you know, in a normal year kind of thing. Unfortunately for the Brewers, they did not do a whole lot in this series to let fans really get crazy aside from that comeback on opening day. Twins pitching was really good. But by and large, it really, again, just seemed like, you know, we're getting there. We're getting closer to normal. And it's just, it was really nice to have something like that after that being gone for so long.
Yeah, one of the unfortunate holdovers, like you mentioned, from the 2020 season is the offense, at least in these first three games. They did obviously piece together a rally there in game one, but needed the help of some Twins miscues, some big Twins miscues. I believe up until Jackie Bradley Jr. homered on Sunday, they had just one earned run scored from the offense throughout the series. So maybe anytime we're talking about the first week of the season, there's obviously no true conclusions you can draw. We got to throw that caveat out there. But, and Tom Haudricourt sort of referred to this in the game story wrap-up from Sunday at jsonline.com, after 2020, it's easy to like look for those early signs and start to worry, okay, this is exactly what we saw in 2020 when things were so inexplicably bad, especially for somebody like Keston Hira, who did not get a hit in the series and missed what looked like a lot of clean pitches right over the plate. He's a guy who really struggled last year. Christian Yelich had a couple hits, but you know, still a lot of strikeouts, a lot more than we became accustomed to in 2018 and 2019. I know you're going to tell me there's just no way to draw conclusions over the first few games of the season, but I guess would you, you know, for somebody who's feeling that little level of concern, do you think that's justified, or is there just, you just got to wait and see, you got to wait a few more weeks?
It's 3 weeks or 3 weeks, three games.
3 days.
I mean,
yeah.
it is what it is, man. You know, I know Craig Counsell gets tired of us asking these questions, and it is our job, but you just can't base anything off of 3 days. It was a bad, you know, overall a bad series. Brewers were frankly lucky to win that first game, and then they really just pretty much got dominated the second two. But it's not like, you know, the Twins were throwing out a bunch of bums there. You know, I mean, Berríos is actually obviously a really good starting pitcher. Minnesota's bullpen is very good. And, you know, Michael Pineda, you know, pitched well enough, you know, today to, you know, keep the Twins in it. And then the Twins, obviously their offense kind of teed off on the Brewers bullpen today. So, you know, you mentioned Hira, you know, he had been trending in the right direction toward the end of spring training offensively. You know, Christian Yelich was crushing it. Everybody really, for the most part, came back from Arizona and Texas, you know, in a good place, swinging the bat. And then all of a sudden, boom, the regular season starts, the lights turn on, and it just kind of got shut down. But, you know, again, we need a much, much bigger body of evidence to really start drawing any conclusions on where the Brewers are and, you know, what the problems are at this point. And I think the Cubs series coming up is going to be a very interesting one. I was talking with Tom earlier about it, and they've got such a drastically different pitching staff than everybody's been accustomed to watching for years, it seems like, down there. You know, the John Lesters and those guys, the Yu Darvishes, are gone, and you know, they've gone basically to a control type pitching staff for the most part. You know, the Kyle Hendricks, Zach Davies, as we all know well, you know, kind of the soft tossers and the locators. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the Brewers respond to that, because, you know, the Twins had some pretty hard throwers and, you know, just kind of different style pitchers, a bullpen that gave some varied looks like the Brewers bullpen does. So, you know, just far too early. I'll be interested to see where they are a week from now, let alone a month from now. Then we can probably draw bigger conclusions.
Brewers will be facing Trevor Williams, formerly of the Pittsburgh Pirates, so a guy that the Brewers have seen before, but a new name for the Cubs on Monday. Adbert Alzolé, I don't think I said that right, even trying to enunciate it. He's going Tuesday. And Kyle Hendricks, like you mentioned, on Wednesday. So yes, some new names in that rotation. Zach Davies pitched for the Cubs on Sunday and in a win for Chicago. So the offense, obviously nobody wants the 2020 offense to show up. But on the other side of things, 2020 Corbin Burnes was really, really good. And I think, you know, it's hard to know how 2020 is going to, you know, how that abbreviated season is going to, you know, whether or not the players who perform so well are able to carry that over into 2021. I think we saw maybe his best performance even still to date, 6 1/3 innings where he did not allow a hit, had allowed just one base runner to that point, gives up a home run on a very good pitch to Byron Buxton and ends up getting lifted out of that game. But Corbin Burns was electric, and you know, the offense didn't score him any runs, and yes, he gets the loss, but that's, I don't think we've seen him better. Like, it's pretty encouraging for anyone who is hoping to see sort of that early sign that he is in fact the 2020 version of Corbin Burns. What do you see out of that guy? I mean, that is, gosh, he's just that pitching lab. I don't know what they do to people when they take people down to that pitching lab, but that guy, he's come out looking like an absolute world beater.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I can go down there and they can help me regrow some hair. You know, like, that's working exactly. Miracles down there, right? You know,
you come out 10 years younger with a full head of hair. Crazy.
I wouldn't put anything past them the way they helped turn Corbin Burns around. But yeah, I do agree with you. I think that was his best performance to date. And he left that game, like you said, Buxton, that was a good pitch, and he just put a good swing on it. It was a well-struck ball that went out. But I, when he left that game, I remember thinking, like, okay, this was a dominating performance, but I feel like he can pitch even better than that. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
He made it look so easy. And I just don't think enough can be said about, you know, he's always had the stuff. Even when he was having his rough year in 2019, he had the stuff. But it's just like a complete mental turnaround for him. You know, and he talked a lot about going to that sports psychologist after that rough season in 2019, the work that he did in the lab, like you mentioned. And it's just kind of everything's kind of come together to, you know, revamp, remake him. And it's just been amazing to watch and cool to watch, because you never like to see guys getting just absolutely pummeled like that. And it was hard talking to him after those games in 2019, the way the homers were flying out and just really didn't have any answers. You know, to see a guy completely turn it around like that and just looking so confident now is really cool to see, and a testament to all the hard work that he's done to get to this point. And, you know, Tom wrote a good story about the Brewers' homegrown pitching coming in opening day. And, you know, just to see the staff with Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns, two completely homegrown, young, starting stud pitchers who, you know, knock on wood, if they stay healthy, are going to be here for a while. It's really, really exciting. And there's more in the pipeline, it seems like, coming through the minors. So just very cool to see. And Corbin, very nice guy, very earnest. It's good to see a guy get rewarded for the hard work.
He has grown hair, by the way. The pitching lab maybe gave him that flow is tremendous now. He's got better hair than Hader. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I was going back and forth with Greg Matzik a little bit on Twitter the other day about, you know, who had the better hair, Hader or Burns. And it's just funny, two ball guys arguing about that. You know, it's jealousy, I think, more than anything. But
yes, leave it to us bald people to talk about people's fabulous hair.
Yeah.
As I watched that game, you know, of course, most people know by now, Burns and Berrios had, both of them had, were perfect for a period of time. They hadn't allowed a hit through six innings. Brewers, of course, didn't get a hit until the eighth inning. Omar Narvaez broke up the no-hitter. That was their one and only hit in that game. But, you know, the thing is, as I watched those guys pitch, I knew they weren't going to make it through nine innings, you know, and no-hitters are so cool for baseball fans still. I think there's just a ton of cachet to have that individual no-hitter. And of course, the Brewers haven't had one since 1987. I just don't know what the circumstances are going to be when they ever get one at this point. Because, you know, Burns was dominating people, striking people out, but there's that sort of pound of flesh that comes with strikeouts. The pitch count was going to be too high, especially in the first start of the year, especially in this year after the abbreviated 2020. I mean, I just don't know. Like, no-hitters might go the way of, like, 30-win seasons, you know, when pitchers would throw ridiculous volumes of innings. Like, I don't know if that's a thing that's going to happen anymore unless it involves like two or three relievers.
Yeah, well, I think what, you know, what we've seen or what we're going to see moving forward is the no hitters by and large are going to come from come on teams that have veteran managers, number one, And yes. number two, the pitchers that are going to be throwing them are going to be guys that are well-established and you feel comfortable leaving them out there and knowing that if, you know, their pitch count gets up to 100, 110, that, you know, you're still going to be quote unquote safe. You know, I think a lot of times younger guys, you know, in addition to not wanting to risk their arms and risk injuries, I think, you know, mentally they're not quite there yet. And they may try to push a little bit too hard and then, you know, all of a sudden, boom, something happens and then you're in a world of hurt, so to speak. So, I would have been just as happy seeing a combined no-hitter. I was actually, you know, we never root for anything, but I'm always rooting for a good story. And yeah. I got my personal no-hitter out of the way last year, finally, that I got to see with Alec Mills. And, you know, after Burns left the game and the Brewers were losing, I selfishly was rooting for a combined no-hitter. It would have been cool to see, you know, no-hitters in back-to-back years and in very crazy ways too. I mean, who would have guessed Alec Mills is going to throw one first of all, and
right.
you know, then second of all, several Twins relievers, you know, maybe teaming up to do it. So, yeah, it's just it's one of those things that's going to be very interesting watching moving forward. And you know, who knows? Maybe it goes the way of the 300 game winner, and you know, even you know what it's going to be interesting at the end of the year this year, how many guys threw 200 innings even, you know, that used yes. to be like the total benchmark for starting pitchers. And, you know, I have a hard time believing there's going to be more than a handful really that accomplished that by the end of the year. So the game's changing and it keeps changing. And some people would argue for the worse, but, there's no question. No matter where it goes, it's always interesting. You can always find little interesting things.
Yeah, and like you brought up the Alec Mills thing. I just said how I feel like single no-hitters are a bygone era. And then we just had the most random no-hitter thrown against the Brewers. And they needed a hit with one out in the eighth. You know, like I know that would have been a combined one. But
And I think, not to cut you off, but if I remember right, Mills threw like 120 pitches that game
yeah.
too. And for a young guy or, you know, an inexperienced major leaguer at least, that was a little bit unusual. So, yeah. Yeah, it was just very improbable, and you do like to see, you know, the well-known guys, the Clayton Kershaws, you know, be able to see a no-hitter thrown by them. That's cool, but it's almost cooler to see something improbable like that. You know, to this day, this is my 11th year now covering the Brewers, and the best pitch game I've seen in person was not a no-hitter.
Max Scherzer.
I mean, that was the closest thing I think I'm ever probably going to come to seeing a perfect game. I mean, he was absolutely, like, from the first inning, you're just like, okay, this is going to be at minimum a no-hitter, you know, like the way he was throwing.
Yeah.
And it wound up a one-hitter, a broken bat, flare from Carlos Gomez. I think it was the eighth inning, and he apologized after publicly to Scherzer for ruining his no-hitter. And I think Scherzer walked Scooter Jeanette to that game. So two base runners total. But I think 16 or 17 strikeouts. It was just a masterful performance, you know. So even though it wasn't a no-hitter, that was still probably the best game I'll have ever seen in person.
Yeah, definitely. We spoke about the tremendous flow that Corbin Burns has going on with his hairstyle, which leads me to talk about another Brewers pitcher, Josh Hader. He was throwing 100 miles per hour in that opening game where he looked as dominant as ever. I do remember talking to people before, kind of at the end of last season, thinking I was going to be pretty surprised if Josh Hader was on this team. Felt like that was the best way, the best opportunity the Brewers had to upgrade their roster. If you know, they had to tighten the belt string, you know, the purse strings when it comes to free agency, having a guy like Josh Hader, especially a guy who's getting increasingly more expensive, was going to be a big trade chip for them. And doesn't sound like anyway that was ever really entertained over the course of the offseason. Became pretty clear he was going to be here. And now he looks incredible. So, you know, you never really know with relievers. It can be pretty volatile. But Josh Hader, man, just like Corbin Burns, like, it doesn't get a whole lot better than that. I mean, he's had big strikeout performances before. But my goodness, what a showing in the 10th inning against the Twins on, you know, on that first game Thursday.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the thing that really, obviously, the triple digits caught all of our attention. And you know, very unusual for a guy to jump his fastball so much over such a short period of time from last year to this year. But I saw, I apologize, I don't remember who tweeted it out, but I saw a chart that somebody did yesterday about recapping, I think it was 20 or 25 pitchers on opening, who pitched on opening day, whose velocity jumped like notably from last year, their averages last year to this year. Hader was obviously right at the top of the list, and I think third on the list was Freddie Peralta. Whose velo jumped way up too. I think even Josh Lindblom made the list as well toward the bottom. But you know, it wasn't just Hader; it was a bunch of guys who all of a sudden were throwing harder. And you know, we can talk about workout regimen and that sort of thing, and feeling healthy and all this and that. But I wonder if you know, last year, just the limited number of innings that guys threw. You know, you're essentially, you had a year plus off of just max effort throwing. And what did Hader throw? 19 innings, I think, total in 2020. Yeah. You know, for a guy that had so much mileage on his arm the few years before that, you know, maybe it was just kind of a physical reset a little bit. And he's just fresh, you know, and Craig Council, of course, broke his arm patting himself on the back after the game, you know, because he had said before the game that I think that Josh Hader looks fresh. So, you know, of course, I pointed that out to him after the game and he took full credit. But it was an astute observation, you know, and they were very careful with Hader in spring training. They were very careful with Devin Williams. He got that late start and, you know, he's gotten some more rest here. He didn't throw one pitch in this Minnesota series. So obviously a fresh Josh Hader and a fresh Devin Williams at the start of the season is a really good thing. And you know, those guys are going to have their innings under their belt by the end of the season, but definitely was fun to watch and just completely blow guys away on opening day.
Williams was eased slowly into his workload in the preseason, so maybe not seeing him this series, maybe they're still just kind of taking it easy with him, although I don't know if there was an obvious opportunity to use him. But those two guys, Hader and Williams, you get into extra innings if you're the Brewers, like they did on Thursday. Obviously, now guys get to start on second base. You start with a runner at second base, but I don't know. I mean, the Brewers have just as good a shot with those two guys of striking out two of the three batters coming to the plate as anybody. Mm-hmm. They have such an advantage in extra innings because of those guys. How this is the second year of that rule now, the runner at second base. How do you feel about it? It's something I completely forgot was carried over from 2020 to 2021 until I saw the innings start literally in that game on Thursday. How do you feel about it?
You and Josh Hader, he forgot too. How do you like that?
Oh man.
The guy is in the game and he forgets that there's a runner on second base.
What's that guy doing out there? He's asking himself.
Yeah. I mean, for a guy who had to sit through that, whatever that was, 15 or 16 inning game against the Pirates with Eric Kratz driving in Jordan Lyles a few years ago.
An all-time game.
Yeah. And getting home at like 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, at that point, you're like, your sick side of you is rooting for the game to just keep going as long as possible. Just, you know, someday to say, hey, I covered a 20 inning game. But on the flip side, if it takes a lot out of the writers, you can only imagine what it does to the roster. And you see all those needless pitching moves, you know, guys getting sent down, guys getting called up just because you need fresh arms. You know, from a strategic standpoint, obviously this really helps teams, you know, cut down on those sorts of moves. And it also, it creates, from a entertainment perspective, it just creates so much more excitement, in my opinion, because it doesn't necessarily take a hit, you know, to score a run in those situations. Everything is so much more magnified. And obviously the games tend to end more quickly. You know, there's obviously purists too who don't like it, just like they don't want the DH in the NL. They got their wish this year, but it sounds like, you know, moving forward, it'll be back. So for me, I think it's fun to watch. It's cool. And you just got to be on your toes. You know, things can really, really turn on the drop of a dime with this new rule. And I think it's fun.
Yeah, I completely agree. It seemed like it was sold last year as a shorten the games because with COVID, you're trying to keep people there as little time as possible. But it does all the things you said from an entertainment standpoint. I mean, that Thursday game went 4 hours and 14 minutes. Like, that's too much.
Yeah.
And that's for the fans and the players. You get into a 16 inning game, that might be cool. But the, both teams, win or lose, just gassed for the next 2 to 3 games.
Well, yeah. You know? And then you're, like I said, after opening day just ends. And you're already going dipping into the alternate training site to make moves for pitching, you know, because if you go 16 innings, you burn through your bullpen already on day one. That shouldn't happen, you know. So I like it. Hopefully it sticks around. I haven't read anything or seen anything to indicate that it's not going to. You know, and obviously baseball's trying different rules and different levels in the minor leagues, which I, you know, some of them sound very radical and stuff. But again, you know, as Craig Council pointed out, it's good to even discuss these things and to try these things. And they're all being tried at different levels. So different players are trying different things. And, you know, who knows, in another year or two, we may see another couple, quote unquote, radical changes, and they turn out to be good as well for the game. So it never hurts to tweak things.
Last thought before I let you go, the Major League Baseball made an unprecedented move this week. Moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta, protesting some of the new legislation around voting in the state of Georgia. And right now the All-Star game is a free agent, and Milwaukee has been mentioned by many people as a possible landing spot for that All-Star game. The obvious tie-in is Hank Aaron, who recently died. He, of course, a great in both Milwaukee and Atlanta. He was going to, I'm sure, be given a ton of recognition in that game. In Atlanta, and you could certainly do the same sort of thing in Milwaukee, where he spent a pretty good chunk of his career as well. I don't know if that's going to necessarily be the deciding factor or anything, but, you know, Milwaukee, having hosted it, you know, 19 years ago, isn't a spot that recently hosted. It's not on the docket for one of the next couple of years. I think it makes some sense. I mean, it's just speculative at this point to guess what MLB is going to do, but as you've seen the chatter about that, how likely do you think that is?
Sounds like you're wishing for it to come to Milwaukee.
Dude, I'd love it if the All-Star game came to Milwaukee. There'd be so much cool stuff to write about and talk about. I'd be all in.
It would be neat. And I think from storyline perspectives, you know, the Hank Aaron angle and everything, absolutely. I think it would make a lot of sense. You know, there has not been a lot out there, but the few things that I've read seem to suggest that, you know, for MLB to quickly shift gears like this, it probably would make the most sense, and the highest likelihood would be a city that has been scheduled to host it in the coming seasons might well get it moved to them, strictly because they have the mechanisms in place and the planning in place, you know, kind of the wheels on the ground, so to speak, already to start transitioning and planning for their All-Star game, whether it be, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. I think there was a report in The Athletic that stated that Coors Field would be a good candidate because they were scheduled to host the All-Star game in I don't remember what year exactly, but in the coming 2 or 3 years, maybe it was 2 years from now. So to see it go to a bigger city too would not surprise me, just because of the infrastructure, you know, more hotel rooms. And again, I understand that there's not going to be full capacity crowds and that sort of thing, but you know, you still have a lot of media coming in, you still have fans, a decent number of fans coming in. So you know, for those reasons, I think that the likelihood, and this is just my guessing, I have no inside information, but you know, my guess would be that the likelihood would be that it would go to some place that already has some All-Star game planning in place and is a bigger city. But if it comes to Milwaukee, great. You know, there'd be some great angles. It's always good to have the game's best in your backyard, and you know, it'd be cool to see another home run derby in Miller Park at American Family Field. All those sorts of things would be very cool. So hopefully MLB makes their decision and makes their announcement fairly quickly, so we don't have a bunch of cities kind of twisting in the wind.
Yeah, for sure. I think it does have to come quickly. I saw LA, the Los Angeles Dodgers, they were planning to host in 2022. They still are going to stick with that schedule, at least as of right now. I think Philadelphia is on the upcoming docket. You mentioned Colorado. I wonder if those cities are going to want an all-star game there where it's going to be, you know, limited attendance, limited, you know, external the various events around it are going to be limited. I don't know. I'm fascinated. This is a move that I think only makes sense in this era where there is less to be concerned about, like with hotels and things like that. But man, I don't know. I have no idea what comes next. So any last thoughts before I let you go, Todd?
You want a food update? Media food update?
Give me the media food update. Is there media food?
There was no media food for this first series, but we've been told for the next homestand there will be some prepackaged boxed meals, which we're all in favor of, considering that there was nothing last year. So Tom and I, all 3 days, opening day, Saturday and Sunday, we went with the chicken tenders and tater tots.
Excellent choice. Solid. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, solid. It was even better because today, Sunday, they had ranch dressing for the first time to go with it. So, we had to settle for ketchup the first 2 days, which is a little bit of a bummer. But I know they're trying to work out the kinks here, first series and all. I get it. I wasn't too upset.
Todd Rosiak is a Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter and food enthusiast for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He is covering the Milwaukee Brewers all season long. We got a full season here in front of us. Not a great start, but a long way to go here. And, of course, Tom Hodricourt as well on the beat. These are your guys. Todd, thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you again very soon.
JR, always a pleasure.
Indeed. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning into the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel Podcast. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.